Welcome to Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA, where innovation meets real-world impact in high-performance computing.
Welcome back to another episode of Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA RTX Pro GPUs. I'm your host, Logan Mahler. Today, topic of the hour, pretty important, AI agents. You've heard it. You've heard the term. Maybe you understand it. It is kind of all the rage. Is we've moved kind of beyond generative into, you know, AI agents. So we're here to talk about agents. But the cool part about today is agentic AI can be really complicated. So we have the founder and CEO, Orjit of Able, that's going to talk to us about their platform and how agents can be deployed very, very quickly to drive business value way faster than you're expecting. So with that, Orjit, thanks for joining us. Tell everyone a little bit about you, your background, introduce yourself, and then we'll jump right into it.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm the founder and CEO of Able. Before this, I started something called Beyond Core, which became Salesforce Einstein Discovery. Ended up writing a book called AI is a Waste of Money, based on 1,000 AI projects I had done at that time. I actually laid out why AI projects fail, and the reasons haven't changed. It's typically disconnect between the business users, the end users, the data science teams, and IT. So the more, everybody says AI is a team sport, but unless you're starting with the end user and the job to be done in mind, you're not going to get value from AI. That book led to the Harvard Business School bringing me back in to co-create and co-teach the first AI course in the MBA program at the business school. Very much focused on how to get business value out of AI, and been doing that for a long time.
Awesome. Humble flex. You know, Harvard brought me back. No big deal.
Oh, I also have the Stanford part too.
Stanford, Harvard, like, where's Yale, man? Dude, I love that.
I have MIT. I didn't get more.
Okay, dude, we're done. We are done. This episode is over. So, okay, humble flex. Obviously, you know what you're doing. That's why we brought you on as a guest. So, Able itself, for everyone, there's a lot of people that will be familiar that are watching this episode because you've worked with Dell, you know, on the server side for a while, and I kind of work on the client side. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, 30 seconds to 1 minute, what is Able? What do you all provide?
It's this fundamental thing. I am Able. Our basic thesis was AI made by the few for the many will be very disempowering. So how can we enable every business user to make their own AI agents in their own way, train them to be their specific needs for their specific use case, and do it in a matter of minutes? That kind of empowering people is the crucial part. So for example, in the state of Nebraska, we did a hackathon with the CIO and the CDO participating, a bunch of interns, agency staff. It was like 30 people, and they built 222 agents in 90 minutes. Most of them had never seen Able before. They were trained in that session. So when you can change the world from, I'm going to build one agent in 6 months and I'm going to spend a huge amount of mind share and complexity on it, to, hey, how can I go in and very quickly build a bunch of prototypes, play around with it, iterate it? Baptist Health once talked about how they did 100 iterations in 5 days. Imagine an enterprise AI agent where you did 100 iterations in 5 days. That's how the game has to change. If you're thinking 1Z, 2Z, I'm going to build one agent, you're not going to get value because the failure rate is too high. If you go in for 1,000 agents and you get 1% success rate, 5% success rate, man, that's a lot of value you're going to get very quickly.
I get it. It makes a lot of sense. And I actually had a guest on that we were talking about, very different angle we were talking about AI, but how, you know, a lot of AI projects fail because, you know, the business doesn't necessarily talk to the end user and there's not this one kind of size fits all approach. And, you know, a question I have for you is like, I think it's 90% of AI projects fail, or whatever, you know, the number is changing, right? Like, how, and you guys are obviously, Able's very successful in not being on the 90% of the failure rate.
Oh no, we fail a lot. Here's the thing, no free lunch. What we are saying is fail really fast. If you're going to fail, fail in a day, because then it's not failure, then it's just learning, right? We fail more than 90% of the time. The difference is we are getting so many shots on target, the failures don't feel like failure, getting too much more success. See, a 90% failure rate is a huge problem if you have a bow and arrow. where you have to get the wind exactly right, you got to point exactly right, like everything has to be perfect. If you have a machine gun, what do? You shoot, you miss, you move the target, you move it, you hit the target, right? That's what we are focused on.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, from your perspective, you know, just, and this is broad, you know, what are some of the top mistakes that enterprises are making, and what does Able do to help them avoid? I mean, obviously the very fast iteration, but what else in your platform enables them to avoid some mistakes that, you know, enterprises make when developing either agentic AI or any sort of, you know, AI workflow?
You probably know this old saying that don't start from the tech, start from what the user wants. In AI, it's gone the other way. It's become a problem. Because what has happened is business users are often used to what they see in ChatGPT and stuff like that, right? So they have a consumer tech mindset to the problem. Now, this consumer tech works fine. It's looked at the, like most of the information you're talking about is on the internet. It's fine. When you get to the enterprise, that data is not on the internet, or better not be on the internet, right? The processes are unique. The terminologies are unique. And that's where a lot of these failure points happen. So what we did is we went in and looked at this point, we have done like thousands, like actually tens of thousands of projects by industry. And what we did is we found the easiest success points. Like one of our favorite ones is what we call the watch changed analytics around, say, retail. Like you're going into your sales data and saying, what has changed over time? The reason that is very powerful is a human being might go draw 50 charts. Not more than that, right? But an agent can go in and look at 10 million charts, do it completely automatically, actually do it without creating hallucination because you use deterministic tools to do the calculations at scale. So we have done stuff like, you know, 5 billion rows of data, 10 million variable combinations for a compute cost of less than $10 because we designed the thing the right way. Okay.
Okay.
So you take something like this where a lot of value is created very quickly. The chance of failure is low because we automatically clean the data. We automatically introspect the data. There is no manual setup. We have really dialed that in over 7 years of doing this at Able. And then the customer gets to value very quickly. Once they get to value, we say, okay, you want something a little more complicated? Here's another template. Go try that. You have built 4, 5, 6 agents. Now let's stitch them together. So you have a order to cash process. Well, you did an inventory check agent. You did a counterparty credit risk agent. You did a shipping agent. Guess what? The agents talk together and now you have order to cash agent. But you gotta start with these successes. And what we find is starting from the templates just gets them started from safe places, places where they have a high probability of success with low probability of failure and where they can get to value very, very quickly.
I love that. And it makes total sense, right? And the next question kind of is a tag along to that, right? Is that, you know, Able basically touts that you can get to business impact or business value within 30 days. So with, like, I'm not going to call them playbooks, it's not the right word, but with agents that are very focused on one key problem in like a set industry or vertical that, you know, like you said, right, that everyone's needing, et cetera. But what outside of that do you do to ensure the impact? Do you know what I mean? Was it to get to these things? Because I just know, and I'm using kind of my Dell corporate experience, is that every business thinks they're special and they're different. And even though they might have the exact same process, right? Like they're taking, one's taking it from Salesforce, another one's taking it from Oracle, another one is from here, you know, so as it live on SharePoint, like who knows, right? So even though the workflow might be the same, and like you want the number, how does Able work with disparate sources of data to be able to quickly stitch all that together? Because that just takes time. That is a huge undertaking.
One important thing is, like, the answer to these kind of questions is never one thing, because if it was, everybody else would have done it already. Let's take a few specific examples that you brought up. One is everybody's data is different, right? The variable names, the structure, etc. And what a lot of companies end up doing is doing a lot of setup before they start doing an AI project. This is my data dictionary. This is how it's configured. This, that, and the other. There's just a lot of stuff that they do at the beginning. What we did is we came up with a statistical analysis approach where we look at huge volumes of data. Like you can literally point it at every table in Snowflake, every table in BigQuery. It goes in and does an automatic profile. And then it figures out these are the variables that actually have a lot of signal in them. Like if I draw charts, these variables have something informative. And then we make it very easy for the human to go in and fix the names of the, let's say, 6 or 7 variables they care.
Okay.
But the generative AI first tries, and the generative AI gets it right most of the time. But if it got it wrong, you know, as the human, you can go edit it. What we did there is, instead of starting with a human first process, we started with the AI first process. Did a bunch of work, presented it to the human, and said, hey, did I get it right? Or I got these 2-3 things wrong? Boom, boom, boom. Let's go. If you're doing data cleansing, Able will actually point out data quality problems that quite often happens. Like, we analyze it, we'll come in and say, hey, you have this variable missing a lot of the time. And when this is missing, this other thing is happening. The human looks at it and says, oh my God, I know what is going on here. I'm going to fix it. But it's a very focused data cleansing. Going to somebody and saying, clean your data. That's like, have your veggies. Great. But like, the point is, when is it clean enough? What's the definition of clean enough? So in Able, we immediately show them our data quality score. Is this good enough? And if it's not, we are going to tell them, where do they need to clean the data? Very, very precise. And then they go do that. Another one is when you have to post-train models. By the way, language models in the enterprise need to be post-trained. I'm just being very blunt about this, because these language models haven't seen the unique data of the enterprise. But today, if you try to do post-training, it's an incredibly complicated process. And the toughest part is data collection. The data scientists literally go to the business users and beg them to give them Excel spreadsheets of bad answers, good answers. Who's going to do that for you? Nobody's going to do that, right? So what we did in Able is we bootstrapped it. So Able gives you an answer. We call it an intern model. When you first start out with Able, you call it an intern model. You go in and say, no, you got it wrong. When I say territory, I mean sales territory, and that's actually in this variable. Or I go in and say, oh, you got this wrong. In our company, we always do the credit check before we look at an invoice, right? The thing is going to be unique to the process, but you give feedback to the AI and you tell it what it got wrong. And then we set it up so it immediately retries. You don't do prompt augmentation. Able automatically figures out how to translate that into prompt augmentation, feature learning, but some kind of real-time adjustment. Maybe we change the settings of the model. Maybe we change the settings on the vector database. But then we come up with a better answer. And we say, is this better? Sometimes the human says yes. Sometimes says no. You still have this problem. Boom, do it again. But within 3 iterations, we get to very, very high accuracy. And the moment the human says, yes, this is correct, we save it off as post-training data. And the moment we get 100 examples, we post-train. So post-training to us is an ongoing process. It's not something you do once in a blue moon. And the data collection is just part of using Able. So that's the whole idea. How do you get humans and AIs working together? And that's the core of I Am Able.
It's very interesting. You said you didn't kind of start with the humans first. But you kind of did, in a sense, like allowing them to be in the process, right? Because as I think about it, I'm like, okay, this all sounds great, but like exactly the example, like the credit check before or territory for me as a regional sales director is states, but me territory as a rep means like a city or like a certain county or whatever you want to call it, right? Like, and I love that, because I think that's one of the biggest things with AI that is amiss. Is that it's kind of the art to get to the data, and the people that are consuming whatever, you know, the agent is saying, I'm not going to say they're the expert, but they know their domain, right? And they know what they need, and being able to give them that on almost a hyper personalized level. Like, you and I could be in the same department in sales, but I'm a manager and you're this, so we could get different things is amazing, is insane.
We call that AI with humility, by the way. Because what happens with a lot of AI nowadays, you're going to find, especially the things that have been distilled, they don't take instruction well, because they think they know the answer, because the distilling process has given them a lot of positive validation. So the AI thinks it really knows what it's doing. We really put in a lot of effort to make sure our AI is coachable. It's very adjustable. And then we post-train. But when we are post-training, we're still retaining that original intern model so that if new data comes in, I can go back and post-train again. You've got to have this mindset of AI is not magic. And a lot of people are missing that point, because they come in from the consumer world, see some really cool demo, and they think, oh, this is going to work in the enterprise. No, it won't. Because that AI has never seen your unique use case, your unique data, your unique way of doing business. And if all businesses did work the same way, we wouldn't need enterprise tech in general.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about tech. I know that you've worked with Dell quite a bit. We're first going to kind of start. We won't talk about the Dell Pro Max GB10. We'll come with that in a second.
Oh, I love the Dell Pro Max GB10.
I know you do. And that's why you're here, because that's what I love too. But let's start with, you know, one thing I want to call it. We are going to talk about kind of local client deployment. But before we do that, you guys have been working with, you know, the Dell kind of ISG team. So think servers, PowerEdge servers for a while. So, you know, and I've seen kind of on your website, you know, obviously we love it when you deploy it on Dell servers, you know, in a data center, but you also have different deployability options, right? I think you work with Google, you work with Amazon, you work with other OEMs. Before we get into that, is that majority of the use cases that you see from a hardware standpoint, is it mostly enterprise level data center cloud serving many, many concurrent users? Is that where you start?
So what happens is, and this is changing for us, thanks to the Spark and the GB10 with you guys, actually. When we started with the largest enterprises. So most of our customers were Fortune 500s. And the reality of any Fortune 500 customer is they always have more than one cloud. So we supported all three clouds. They always have technology for different companies like Dell, right? They always have edge use cases. They always need something done on the desktop. So one of the mistakes that most startups were making in this space is they started with a cloud-first mentality, which is fine, but remember that the vast majority of enterprise data, even today, is not on the cloud. So we started with an enterprise mindset, always jobs to be done. We are always focused on what the customer needs, right? So we, from very early days, we were all three clouds, which was a very hard thing to do because these clouds don't work in a, the way serverless works in Google is very different from the way it works in Azure, for example. So we had to figure that out. Right. Then when we started working with you guys, what was really important was, you know, what happens when we have different kinds of processors? What happens if I have a CPU, GPU on the same server? What happens if it's on one piece of silicon? You actually have to optimize differently. And this is where, like, you know, working with you guys, one of the fun things is you guys really get into the deep details of that and how the software is orchestrated and exactly how we're going to do support. That's been the fun part of working with Dell, getting that intimate on getting these servers optimized for what we're doing.
Which I love. Now, let's talk about what I love more is the Dell Pro Max with GB10. So you've been working with NVIDIA. You were, I don't know if you're an inception partner, but like from a technology partner standpoint, yeah, you started kind of with the Spark. So let's kind of start, you know, there. So it was kind of a jump, right? From a traditional enterprise, right? Like the Dell Pro Max GB10, small, well, actually I do have one over here, but I'm not going to get it out. But small device, about the size of a box of Kleenexes, very high VRAM, really an AI development box, an AI development on a go type kit. So when that came out, obviously it was, well, Jensen announced it. It came out in October at GTC, but it announced in October. But I got to ask, from where your business model was, what made you think like, hey, this might be great? Like, why would we do this? I don't know. I'm just curious because it's so different, right?
There is a philosophical answer and there is a pragmatic answer. I'm going to give you the philosophical answer first. In tech, we always bounce between centralization and decentralization. This has been true in the entire history of tech. But ever since the cloud, we have been very, very focused on centralization. Decentralization move actually hasn't happened for a while, much longer than it normally happens. I had this thesis that AI eventually is going to be very personal. That, you know, this idea of AI agentic memory is actually becoming very important. Now imagine in the future, what would happen is I would have a device on me that has my agent memory, that has all my context. Now that thing will talk to different data devices, different compute surfaces. Like I walk into a building, it's going to pick up the local compute to put the workload, but the information specific to me will be in something very personal. And that was, again, one of the original thesis of this I am able idea, right? So when we saw the Spark for the first time, and I was at CES when he actually showed it for the first time, I'm like, oh my God, this might be it. This is getting there, right? It's powerful enough that I can do real work. And the pragmatic part was, we kept hearing from customers, I can't move this data to the cloud to try out AI use case. I think I will get value from it, but I can't move it to the cloud to test. And when I ask for access to this data, people are telling me, show me what would be the value of doing this. So I have a chicken and egg problem. Like, how do I get started? And what the Spark does is I can put the data air-gapped on the desktop, right? The Dell Pro Max or the NVIDIA DGX Spark, I'm running it air-gapped on my desktop. I put it in, I evaluate it, I build some agents. I literally carry that box, walk it to my CFO's office, put it in there and say, hey, let me show you how I can save you $10 million. Can I please have permission to take this data to the cloud so I can do it at scale? That agent can't scale because that box is too small, right? You need to take it to a different scale. And that scaling would be all off your PowerEdge stuff. Like Dell has that whole stack. Like just how big do you want to go? I can help you go as big as you want. Or if you want to go to the cloud, you can go to the cloud. But that starting point, that chicken and egg problem of how do I confirm this data is good enough for an AI without moving the data to the cloud, I think that's held back way too many AI projects. And 2 days after the Spark actually came out was Gartner Symposium. And we had the Spark on the desk at Gartner Symposium. And people like the CIO of a major US state came in, loaded up his own data, tried it. And he was like, look, this has been my biggest problem. Air gap security, I have to give control of my data. I need to know where it's running. I need controlled cost. I don't need any surprises. Because everything is running on this device, whatever I do, at most I'm paying for some energy from my power bill will go up, but nothing else is going up, nothing crazy. And I need to be able to, once I build something, push it out to where I will actually use it. Once he got that value prop, he was one of the first customers buying Able on the Spark right after that. And he's live in production already. That's the difference. People who have been stuck for a long time can suddenly get unstuck. They can prove the value of the agent and then say, give me the money to scale it.
I love it. Cause that's, you know, everything that I've got. And it kind of aligns with a lot of, you know, the purchasing, right? And not for Able specifically, but for the Dell Pro Max or GB10 is, yeah, there's been a few orders of, you know, 100 here, 1,000 here, but it's literally like onesie twosies, even from big companies. Cause you're right. It's exactly as you describe, like you're never gonna get permission to take a bunch of data to the cloud. Like right away, you're never going to get access to all this data, but to be able to do that makes a whole lot of sense.
And the one thing we're doing differently is officially the NVIDIA perspective on this originally was it was for developers, right? We have CFOs doing this. We have healthcare researchers doing this. We have operations managers doing this, right? Because our point of view always is if we have automated it and templatized it, anybody can then start building their agents. The prototyping angle is still real because you can't scale it beyond a certain point. But you prototype and then you push to the right environment for scale.
Makes sense. So, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about your favorite kind of agents and workflows that you have, you know, kind of by industry. We'll go through that in a second. But you're right. And I think that is the valuable point is that AI is probably not for you because you've got like MIT, Stanford, Yale, like Oxford, you know, but it's making AI easy and accessible, right? Because developers, unfortunately, in this country, you know, we don't have a whole lot of them. Like, I mean, we're getting more, but we don't have a whole lot of them. And you're right. I guess the question is, how did you see the vision of, because I've seen a lot of tools, not like this or platforms like yours necessarily, but like are more open, right? Where you have a lot more customability and stuff like that. I guess where was the idea or the vision to be like, and also the other part of this question is like, what technical level, like seriously, like my dad, 75, boomer of all boomers, still sends emails in all caps. Like it's ridiculous. And could my dad legitimately go into Able, if the data was there, he could legitimately run an agent.
If he still retains his curiosity, he can. So when we first launched Able, this is, 2018, we started the company. 2019, before it went GA, we are going to Gartner Summit to launch it as GA in those days. We did a hackathon at UC Berkeley where we took high school kids, history majors, and MBAs, gave them 90 minutes of training on Able. In those days, it needed 90 minutes of training, and then put them up against expert data scientists using their favorite tools. The high school kids beat the expert data scientists. My entire team was terrified. They were like, you haven't gone GA yet. What are you doing? Why are we doing this at UC Berkeley? Why are we doing it with high school kids? Can we make this a little fairer? But the point is, if you really believe in this idea that tech only breaks through when anyone can use it. Like if you think of the internet, The shift in the internet happened when anybody could make a website. The shift in social happened when anybody could be the creator. If tech only takes off when anybody can do it, then your definition of anybody has to be very different. Nobody says their tech is hard to use. So going and saying my tech is easy is useless. Saying I've had 4 hackathons, public hackathons at UC Berkeley, all 4 years, the high school kids using Able beat the expert data scientists, that's saying something.
You know what we should do? This is completely random. Is my daughter's in 6th grade, so I've tried to like really educate her. But I would love, just out of morbid curiosity, to do like something at a middle school with like 6th and 7th graders, just to see if they could do it.
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old. I actually have her use Able. I kid you not, right? But it's important. In fact, when we did it a long time back, I forgot how old my co-founder's kid was. I think he was like 7-8 years old at the time. Right? Because yeah, he must have been, because he's not yet in college, or he's just barely in college now. And he was testing it out for us because we wanted to first see whether people could actually use it before we gave it to a bunch of high schoolers.
That's amazing. I love that. So, okay, let's jump in here with a little the time that we have left is, you know, if you go to your website, which is able.com, AIBLE.com, you can go to kind of the case studies. And you kind of break it down by use case and by industry, right? So, you know, you've got CPG, manufacturing, healthcare, education, food and beverage, construction, distribution, retail, legal, transportation. The list kind of goes on and on. From those, I'd love to hear from your perspective, maybe 1 or 2 of the agents that were used in you can pick whatever industry you want, that had that have a just profound impact. Where whenever you launched it, you were like, oh my goodness, like this saved $1 billion or this saved 10 million, you know, whatever the amount is. I'd love to just make it real with a couple of stories so people can kind of understand the scale and the power of Able and, you know, Dell Technologies, whether on the server or on the GB10 side.
Let's first start with one where I feel like we have impacted lives.
All right, let's do it.
This is at one of the largest hospital systems. And what happens is, you know, people don't show up for appointments sometimes. And then there are people who have appointments 6 months out. So we built an agent that would actually figure out which people were not going to show. Because if they don't show, the surgeon's time is wasted, the equipment time is wasted. That's a lot of money, by the way. Huge amount of money too. But what happens is if you can figure out who's going to not show, if you can figure out who would move their appointment forward, like who are the right people to move the appointment forward, and you can have a chat interface, go to 3, 4, 5 people and say, hey, would you like to move your appointment forward? Yes, you do. Okay, let me reschedule you. Do it completely automatically. Because a human can't go in and just, you know, contact all those people. It doesn't really work. Of course, we made a lot of money because equipment utilization goes up. But my favorite part of it was people coming in and saying, you know what? I had a scan scheduled for 3 months out. And this thing asked me, do I want it 2 days later? In just 2 days from now, I rescheduled and they found something, and it actually would have been disastrous if it had been found 3 months later. It would have been too late. For me, I'm getting goosebumps while telling you this story because like I actually interviewed this person and accidentally she was an employee of that hospital system. And she was like, look, normally I would never tell people to use this kind of story, but like it changed my life literally. And that's what is important about these agents. Think about the impact you can have on people's lives and doing humanly impossible things. One thing that we always try to do, we are not out there saying, how can I take a manual process and automate it? We always think in terms of what is humanly impossible. No human could sit there, look at all the appointments and figure out which are not going to show, figure out which ones could move forward, do the, they're just humanly not possible. And now let's go to a very pragmatic place where things are changing a lot. Anytime things change, you need agents because human beings cannot find unknown unknowns. We are good at finding the same patterns we know and we'll look for it. We'll draw the same charting tableau over and over again. But when it's unknown unknown, when things are changing, it's very hard. In fact, when President Trump announced his tariffs, I was joking. I was like, this is the best sales story for us because just everyone's world got completely messed up, right? If you think about your supply chain disruption, if you look at your purchase patterns, and what we were doing was looking at every single purchase pattern across all locations and finding underlying patterns to what is shifting. very, very specific patterns. For these items in these geographies, patterns have changed. That becomes something no human being could have found. And the economic impact of something like that, like how has my business changed? And then you can do infinite drill down. So let's say I show you that your business has changed for this kind of a SKU. You drill into it. Then it goes in and just does a what's changed on just that SKU and says, okay, these stores are behaving different. Then you drill into that and you go in and say, you know, like that infinite ability to keep analyzing completely automatically millions of variable combinations. And then summarizing that using language models, but confirming that the math is all correct. We are not using the language model for the math. We double check it to make sure that our analysis is 100% accurate.
This is amazing. This is great. I mean, it's, I hate to like give people compliments on the webinar, but like, this is, I mean, it just, it's honestly, it's so smart. I mean, it's just, it's smart. It works. It's easy. Oh, it's not easy, but like it's smart. It works, but it's easier than anything else.
Yeah, it's easy. Just start with a template. Depending on the template you choose, it asks you very different questions, right? So if you're trying to analyze claims, it's going to ask you very different questions than if you're trying to do a retail what's changed. And it's very context specific. So you answer between 1 and 5 questions, it's off to the races. That's it. And it comes with sample data, so you can play around and see what the experience would be. You can look at the sample data to say, this is the kind of data I need. So we have really put in a lot of effort over the years to make it simple. We have a saying, simple is hard, so we do simple.
It can be. Simple. So, Arijit, this has been a fantastic conversation. So what I like to do, you know, as we kind of close out the episode, one, give you a moment if there's anything else you want to cover.
Let's talk about why GB10 is the best thing for agents. We didn't go there.
Well, you kind of did, because it basically validated my whole business strategy around this is a prototype device. Get it in the hands. It's easy, simple, quick. Put it on, prototype, prove out your point, and then scale it up.
But here is the thing people don't understand. If you go into just a GB10 and ask a chat question, it'll be kind of slow. Agents are perfect for GB10 because what happens is it's actually designed. We run all of the agent coordination, all the agent tools, all the agent memory in the Grace, in the 20 cores of the Grace, the CPU. We run all the models on the Blackwell. And all of it is in one shared piece of memory. So everything is synchronous. Everything is like nothing is moving out of the piece of memory. So the end-to-end agent is super fast, even if the model is faster on the cloud. And this is where you have to start thinking about agent inference versus model inference. Model inference will be faster on the cloud, the more and more resources you throw at it. Agent inference will be faster depending on whether you have thought through your architecture. And the Grace Blackwell is perfect for it. Secondly, the GB10 does very well when you have high prefill. So a bunch of input, a little bit of output. That's the agent. It doesn't do well where it's a little bit of input, a lot of output. It'll be much slower. Finally, and this is going to become very important now that people are waking up to this OpenGlaw thing and getting excited. Well, by the way, we have had fleets of agents talking to each other, running long-term for a while now. One of the things we found was concurrency was very important. Because we end up running multiple agents using the same models. So we need to be able to push up the concurrency. How many requests is the GPU processing at a given time? And the GB10 is very good at that. Like as you push up concurrency, it performs really, really well. So if you're going to have many, many agents running on that box, or when you get to the server, if you're running it on one of your PowerEdge devices, for example, having that kind of an architecture really makes a difference. So for agents, the Spark is uniquely well suited.
See, I did not know that. I mean, I knew, you know, traditionally, right? The more VRAM you throw at a model, the faster it'll go generally, right? But like, I did not realize that that was not necessarily the case with agentic AI. Like I kind of figured it was the same. And that's so interesting.
We're going to do a very fun test for yourself. Give it 100 input tokens and 1,000 output tokens, and give it 1,000 input tokens and give 100 output tokens. You'll see what I'm talking about immediately. It's like it crushes it when you put a high prefill. It's perfect. I'm 100% sure NVIDIA was designing it for agents. I've just not found a research paper or something where they explicitly say that, but it's just too perfect for agents.
I would be surprised. Like, I don't have any data you know, or any statement to back that up. But just thinking about that launching last year at GTC and it being the year of the agent, like I kind of, it all kind of makes sense, to be honest, at the end of the day. So that's fantastic. I love it. You know, what I like to do, you know, now that we've closed out on Blackwell, is like give you, you know, 30 seconds to a minute, pretend someone is watching and they just tune in at this point. What is the elevator pitch for Able? What do you want them to walk away with?
Get started today. Get your data on a air gap GB10 at the edge. Analyze your data. Get the agent proven. You can try 100 agents on your own in a matter of a week. Build 100 agent. Find 5 that are useful. Walk to your exec. Say, I have created this value. Do you want it at scale? Take that analysis paralysis out of the picture. Just get started. Build stuff. And it's secure. And it's cheap. It's not that expensive to run. And there are no surprises. Just get going.
Exactly. Like Michael Jordan said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take at the end of the day. So this was great. One of my favorite episodes. I learned a ton. And so where can one people find you? And then I'll put the link to the website at the bottom. But if people are interested in, you know, obviously contacting you or the sales team, is the best to go to the website and go to the schedule the demo button. What's the best way for them to reach out?
Just go to able.com and schedule a demo. In general, we respond back pretty quickly. It's just been an exciting collaboration with Dell. You guys are doing a lot more ramp up of the sales efforts now. And we're doing some fun stuff together at Gartner Symposium. And so Gartner BNX Summit and then at GTC. So I think they should just come and check out live at these events what is possible.
Exactly. We're going to have a whole host of Able agents running on some new mobiles that I can't even talk about at GTC, but come check out outside activation GTC. So with that, you know, Orjit, really appreciate the time. You know, I personally love this episode. I think it was fantastic to really show that AI, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be complicated when you're working with the right partner and you have the right things in place. Yes, there will always be stumbling blocks. You'll fail, but if you can fail very quickly, like, you know, kind of the machine gun example, you know, you fail quickly and learn from it and you can drive a ton of business value. So at the end of the day, you know, get your shoes in the race, get your feet in the race and start running. So with that, Logan Lawler, wrapping up Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision, NVIDIA RTX GPUs, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Lab.